Gita chapter 9, text number 9. O Dhananjaya, repeat. All this work cannot bind me. I am ever detached from all these material activities, seated as though neutral. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. One should not think in this connection that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has no engagement. In His spiritual world, He is always engaged. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated, Atmaramasya tasyasti prakityana samadgama. He is always involved in His eternal, blissful, spiritual activities, but He has nothing to do with His material activities. Material activities are being carried on by His different potencies. The Lord is always neutral in the material activities of the created world. This neutrality is mentioned here with the word Udasinavat. Although He has control over every minute detail of material activities, He is sitting as if neutral. The example can be given of a high court judge sitting on his bench. By His order, so many things are happening. Someone is being hanged, someone is being put into jail, someone is being awarded a huge amount of wealth. Still, He is neutral. He has nothing to do with all their gain and loss. Similarly, the Lord is always neutral, although He has His hand in every sphere of activity. In the Vedanta Sutra, 2.1.34, it is said, Vaishamya nair grinye na. He is not situated in the dualities of this material world. He is transcendental to those dualities, nor is He attached to the creation and annihilation of the material world. The living entities take their different forms in the various species of life according to their past deeds, and the Lord doesn't interfere with them. Om Agana Timirandasya Kananjana Shalakaya Chaksuru Militanena Tasmai Shri Gurena Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dhanishma Padantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yustapara Kamalam Shri Guruam Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sajajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Savarutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Shri Radha Krishna Bhakti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Shunyavari Asya Chadisutarine Hey Krishna, Purna Sindhu, Dina Bandhu, Vigatake, Gopisha Gopika Kanta, Gaya Kanta, Moshite. Namo Mahavaranaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gora Tishe Nama Vande Vanshikapa Turvischa Kripa Sindhu Vivacha Patitanam Pavane Vyo Vaishnave Vyo Na. That's a very important verse. That means I offer my obeisance to all the devotees, Vaishnavas who are full of compassion for the fallen conditioned souls. So that's all of you. Anyone who wants to hear Bhagavad Gita, anyone who chanted Hare Krishna even once, is a Vaishnava. Of course, there are many many variations and gradations of Vaishnavas, just like there are even of demons. There's some small demons, partial demons, some full-on demons, very powerful demons. So devotees, some of us are a little bit devotee, we still testing, getting more purified, and we become more and more absorbed as a devotee and less absorbed in Maya. So Krishna is completely aloof, that's what he's saying. First, previous to these verses, he's describing that. You know, how he's creating everything. And how everything is under his control. But then he's neutral to it. He's not sitting, you know, directing it like a puppet master exactly. His energies are taking care of everything. Just like the queen here, she's on top of everything, but she's not, you know, thinking about what are the policemen doing, how they're arresting people, and, you know, how the sewage system is working. She has all kinds of other people take care of that, putting in the sewer pipes and electricity, and they rarely ever come to work, or even the prime minister. But they are ultimately in charge of all that. Krishna much more. He's always absorbed in his activities in the spiritual world, singing and dancing, enjoying loving relationships with all his associates, gopis, gopas, the cows, even has pet dog. Everyone is Krishna. In the spiritual world, everyone is just serving Krishna. The birds are singing for Krishna, the trees are bearing fruit for Krishna consciously. They're all conscious. Here, the tree is not conscious. It's just living. The soul is not conscious of, that I'm producing this fruit and it will go to Krishna. But in the spiritual world, they are. Everybody just wants to serve Krishna. And Krishna is absorbed in it. One, I think, was a German guy. He went to India and he was... saw all the different gods, you know, the demigods. He concluded that Krishna was the supreme god because that he's not doing anything. All the rest of them have work to do. They're in charge of something. Indra is in charge of the rain and those kind of things, and someone's in charge of the water, and someone's in charge of, you know, something. They all have work to do. Yamaraj is in charge of, you know, judgment for the people that stay in the material world. But Krishna is just playing his flute and enjoying with his associates. But ultimately, he can do anything in this material world. But like nowadays, well, I guess it's always been that way, but in some places where there are people, they believe in God, but they have an idea that God gets angry and he's punishing the sinful people. So when there's an earthquake, or they don't say, well, God is angry, God is punishing all these people. It's not exactly like that. He doesn't get angry at the sinful people. He's actually compassionate towards them. But they're getting the reaction, and he can't stop that. Because he's giving everybody what they want. So people that are getting suffering in the material world, they think, well, I don't want this. I wanted to be happy. I wanted to enjoy. I wanted to live forever. Right? I wanted everyone to love me. But it doesn't happen. Because once you come into the material world and you're trying to enjoy it, we have to accept the laws of the material world. Like if you go to prison, then you're subjected then to the laws of the prison. So if you follow them all, then your suffering will be minimized. So the material world is compared to a prison house. And there's laws. And scriptures all over the world, different scriptures give, you know, guidance of how one should live in the material world, in order to make it least miserable. The Vedas give what yajnas to do, what kind of sacrifices, what to do, what not to do. It's like there's laws of the state. So you learn, you know, basic things, no stealing. That's a spiritual law. I mean, it's in the Vedas. It's not exactly spiritual, but it's one of the yamas and niyamas, no stealing, no lying. These things could get you in trouble if you're stealing. At least someone will steal from you whatever you've stolen, and maybe more. If you get arrested, then you're in jail. You know, so all these things. But the Vedas give higher standards also, like, you know, what to do and what not to do. And then if we can avoid the things that cause suffering directly and do the things that are good, then, which ultimately means Krishna Seva, serving Krishna, one can be much better off. It's true that the sinful activity, ultimately because of our sinful activities, we get caught up in the, that's why we're in the material world. But like recently there was an earthquake in China. Previous to that earthquake, all over the world they were criticizing the Chinese government for doing something in Tibet, right? Saying how bad they were. After the earthquake, everybody felt sorry for them, concerned about all the people that were getting killed and so much damage. And then they saw that the government was working very hard to do whatever they could do, and they started glorifying them. And then one famous movie actress from America, she had just been studying a little bit of Tibetan Buddhism with the Dalai Lama, so she knew karma. Everyone has some idea about karma, right? So she said, she was in Hong Kong of all places, which is China. She said, I wonder if it's their karma, you know, because they're causing trouble for the Tibet. And that got all over the world, you know, how could she say that? Of course, for the tens of thousands of people who got killed and the millions of people who got lost their homes, and, you know, most of them didn't even know about Tibet. What to speak of causing trouble for Tibet. Maybe a few people in the government did something. And we never know what's really going on anyway. But so, and then it did. I saw some headline on the internet that said, you know, what is karma? So I looked. So all kinds of Buddhist people were trying to explain, like, what they meant by karma and how it's not exactly that. But none of them have it exactly right. I was thinking we should write something. Karma literally means action. So all the people, if there's a plane crash, then obviously all the people on that plane, for some reason, you know, were destined to die in the same way at the same time. But it's not that they all have done exactly the same thing all their life. It's just all whatever they had done culminated in that, for whatever reason. And people aren't expecting. Nobody woke up thinking, oh, there's going to be an earthquake today, and I better pray or something. I better, right? This is in the Mahabharata. Yudhishthira was questioned by the Yaksha, who was actually Yamaraj. And he asked many questions. One of them was, what is the most amazing thing? So he said, well, the most amazing thing is that everybody has seen that everyone dies. Yaho Aharaha Yad Bhutani, Yaho Yad Yamalaya, they all go to death. But still everyone is thinking, I have to make a permanent arrangement for enjoying in the material world. I can live, I won't die. Of course, if we ask you, most of you say, yes, I know I'm going to die. But people don't live like they're going to die. And even if they really know they're going to die, most people don't live really how they should live. Different things happen. I don't know if you remember, I must have been in high school, but that was hundreds of years ago, but there was a TV show called Run for Your Life. Anybody ever heard of that? You're old enough. Is that in England also? Probably was. Anyway, it was about a very rich lawyer, and he was young, and he was in the hospital, and they told him, you have some kind of disease, and you'll live 1 year. So he thought, oh boy, 1 year, and you know, I'm young. So he sold out his whole business, and he set off to do everything that he thought, you know, he should do in the rest of his life to enjoy. drive F1 race cars and climb big mountains and, you know, so many, every week was a different far out thing. So it was so popular that he got to live one more year. And that's what most people are thinking, oh, I'm going to die, so I have to enjoy a lot. You know, death is coming, so I'm going to try to enjoy more now. But that's the opposite they should do. When Devamrita Swami was here, he was telling, the devotees actually went out in New Zealand, like, you know, the television does. They were asking people, if you knew you were going to die in a few days, what would you do? And most of them said, I'd get my credit card and I would buy everything I ever wanted because I know I don't have to pay for it. And I would get as much of whatever kind of intoxication that I like and invite all my friends and just pig out. Right? That's what most people said. A few people, you know, like I guess girls, they said they want to be with their family or something. I read another similar thing that was done, it was much long ago. And the men were basically the same, but at least many of the women, they said they would go to church or they would pray or something. But basically, more and more, the women are just like the men now, and they're just partying, right? In England, in London, it's a big concern of the government how the girls are binge drinking, right? The men also, the students, drinking until they pass out or become very violent, crazy. They're so miserable. If you're really, really happy, you certainly don't need to go and drink terrible tasting, you know, whiskey in order to forget everything, right? The only reason we want to seek out intoxication is because we're suffering and we want to forget that. And think that and be illusion that everything's all right, everything's nice, I'm happy, I'm powerful, everybody loves me. In other words, I'm God. Everyone's trying to be God, and they may not say directly, I am God, many people do, but they're trying to be the enjoyer, trying to be the proprietor, trying to be the most beautiful, even if it has to be within a very small group. That I'm the richest man in my group, right? Forget the rest of the people in the world. Even the richest man on this earth, he may think he's big, but how does he compare to demigods? Kuvera, or Krishna, what to speak of Krishna, who's the owner of everything. Whatever these rich men have, it actually doesn't belong to them. They can't keep it. At least at the time of death, they have to give it all up and start over again in the next life. So Krishna, though, but he remains aloof. But if we're in this material world, Krishna is also there in everyone's heart. And when we want to get out from them, if we're trying to just change the material world, that will never happen. Many people talk like that, or we'll pray and change everything, and it will never be another tornado, and there'll never be another disease, and there'll never be anyone. I saw one Christian guy praying on TV, and he was saying like that, and you will never get sick. Oh Lord, pray that these people will never get sick, and they'll never have an enemy, and nothing will ever go wrong. And people thought, wow, that's great, but that can't happen. But they like to hear that. When we tell people that the material world is a place of misery, it's dukkhalayam ashashvatam, it's created for suffering, it doesn't sound very nice, you know? But there is a spiritual world that is perfect, where there's no suffering, where there's no birth, and there's no death, and there's no disease. People criticize atheists. Why did God, if God is nice, why didn't he make the world nice? He did. The spiritual world is like that. But we left. I want to enjoy. I want to be the center. I want to be the big shot. Why should Krishna get all the glory, you know? So Krishna says, all right, and here it is. That's his mercy. Just like the government is considered nowadays, I guess in European Union, they don't have any capital punishment, right? That's considered merciful to just let someone stay in jail their whole life, at least be alive, right? Although by karma, it's more merciful if the murderer, that he gets killed by the government, then his next life will be better off. But they consider that merciful. So Krishna, it's some kind of mercy. Krishna's mercy is that we refuse to live in a spiritual world where everyone only wants to serve Krishna. Although then they're all very happy, of course. So he gives us the material world. He doesn't say, okay, you're finished. Put you out. No more existence. Some people seek that. That's what the Buddhists, Mayavadis are seeking, this nirvana, this merging into the oneness, or merging into nothingness, because they're suffering so much, and they see that the material world is full of suffering, and they can't see any way out. Maybe they're intelligent enough to analyze, but they don't know, they don't have information. Krishna, as soon as we ask Krishna to help us, he will help us. And he will take us out of the material world, although we may have to stay in this body and stay, but our consciousness can be elevated so we know this is not the ultimate real place. This is a temporary place where I put myself in here. God didn't put me here because he didn't like me, like some people think. And why did God do this to me? We volunteered. It's like any criminal. Of course, in the jail, every criminal will say, no, I'm innocent. Right? The lawyer cheated me, or the judge was bribed, or something. Sometimes that happens. But even if, like sometimes a man's put in prison, and then later it's proven that he didn't do the crime that he was put into prison for. But if we understand karma, we know that in some other lifetime he did. And he didn't get caught for it in the last life, and was thinking, I tricked them, you know, I'm very clever, but in the next life it'll come. You cannot cheat the laws of nature, although everyone is trying. So Krishna is this crude example, he's compared to a judge. The judge may send someone to prison, he may fine someone big money, he may award someone else big money, but for him it's all the same, right? The judge doesn't get, well, not always, but proper judge, you know, is usually made a judge because they've done the best they can to believe that he's above all these things. Some judges may get money from somebody for punishing one person or for awarding another person, but they're not supposed to. By law, that doesn't happen. The judge is sitting there, and whether he condemns someone or lets someone go, for him, it's just a job. He's just going by the law. And he doesn't get paid any different or anything. He's neutral. He just goes by the law, and he tries to be fair. And Krishna, though, is perfectly. That he doesn't have to take a personal interest. For ordinary people are totally under the laws of nature. When someone is becoming a devotee of Krishna and starting to serve Krishna and take shelter of Krishna, then Krishna does take an interest. And things may go differently than just your karma. Sometimes he may take away everything quicker. Or if there's suffering due, he may relieve that very much, that we don't get the full punishment for our sinful activities. If we're really giving them up, we're really trying to serve Krishna. And so a devotee thinks, well, I deserve much more suffering, but Krishna has very kindly reduced it. The materialist will think, I don't deserve all this suffering, and why is God doing this to me? What's wrong with him? Or why did he let him give me so much trouble? I should kill him and then my life will be nice, right? Or I'll get rid of him or I'll do something. I'll blaspheme him, depending on what kind of people they are, where they are in the world. The demon is thinking, Krishna described, Ishwaraham. That means I am the controller. Aham Bogi. I am the enjoyer. Siddoham. I am perfect. Balavan. I'm powerful. And Sukhi. I am also happy. And I have an enemy. I'll kill him. I'll get all his assets. I'll be more happy. And more powerful. And more perfect. We don't want to be like that. That's a demon. But many people are like that. But spiritual life really means to just work on ourselves and develop, learn what to do and what not to do. The main thing to do is to chant Hare Krishna. Four basic things not to do: illicit sex, gambling, intoxication. These are principles of freedom. If one becomes free from intoxication and gambling and illicit sex and meat eating, then we're not controlled by it. You know, we're free from the influence of so many different things. And anger will be reduced and all kinds of things. And we won't be suffering by being manipulated by all the people promoting these things. Right? People want to have illicit sex, it's very costly. Gambling is very costly. Right? Some rich people think, well, I just take 100 pounds or 500 pounds or 1,000 pounds and I gamble till it's gone, so I don't risk anything. That's their fun, they think. But chances are, in the process of doing that, one day they'll win and then think, oh boy, if I just take a little more next time, I'll win much more. And before you know it, they'll be bankrupt. Happened to so many people. With many suicide I heard in the parking lot of the casino. Right? And wherever there's gambling, of course, there's more intoxication. Because if you win, you have to celebrate. And if you lose, you have to drown your, you know, you have to forget about it. Isn't it? And there's more prostitution, of course. In Las Vegas, that was the first place in America that had many casinos, they have a law about that the casino can't be within a certain distance of the school. So there was one case, and they made this, the government told the school they had to move. They don't want to disturb the casino. So if one can learn to avoid those things, then his life is so much more peaceful and simplified in every way. And when you see those advertisements, you don't think, well, let me try that one. The last time I got drunk, it wasn't so good, but this says that this beer will be really good. Right? Or this casino, you win, much more people win there. Right? Or this lottery, you know, so many people have won, so I'll do this one. That Maya is very tricky like that. And now they promote the safe sex. I even saw a commercial on the television once in the airport. I was in Johannesburg, if you're interested. So they had about 100 televisions showing the same thing. And it was a commercial. I was looking at it and I couldn't figure out, what is this? Remember that Pac-Man? You know, that computer game? I think it was the first computer game, right? So it had like a maze and it had this Pac-Man looking thing going. And then a bottle of beer would come, whoop. And then a bottle of wine, whoop. And then, you know, a bottle of whiskey, whoop. And then gradually, and there was a big black cloud following it. And then gradually it was, you know, bouncing off the walls and, you know, getting all screwed up. And then there was a very effulgent green bottle, whoop. And then everything was all right. And there's some drink that they say, like, you know, can cancel the effects of all your drunkenness. Which is not possible, but they advertise like that, that, you know, you can get as drunk as you want and just... So the bus today had some beer, it said, this company advises you to drink responsibly. You've seen that, right? All the beer ads, I think, say. Anybody can tell me what it means to drink responsibly? Anybody? Huh? What does it mean? What?
It means to use another beer responsibly.
Yeah, but how can you do that?
There is actually, I read about one way is to transmute the barley grain and everything in the actual product, and some people do the homo sacrifices, and can apparently change the substance of the actual alcohol so that it doesn't give you any bad karma, and they drink it. I've read it. I haven't tried it.
Well, I don't know. They're talking about don't drink if you're, don't drive if you're drinking and things like that. You know. Don't drink too much because then you might get in a fight in the bar. You might vomit all over your next door neighbor. You know, but like the cigarette has all kinds of warning. The whiskey doesn't have that. The warning, drinking this may lead to more drinking. And it doesn't tell you that how many alcoholics there are and how the most abused intoxicant in the world is alcohol, how many marriages it's ruined, how many deaths it's caused, you know, every day, how much medical expenses are required to take care of people. They're just beautiful bottles, shining, the most beautiful bottles and labels, right? And advertising. So, but if one completely doesn't drink, you don't have to worry, right? No intoxication. But if you're thinking, well, a little bit is all right, but then that little bit every time becomes, well, you know, a little bit more is all right too. And at a certain point you can't discriminate. It doesn't take very long before you have no discrimination. And then not everybody becomes an alcoholic, but every alcoholic started with a little bit, right? Isn't it? Nobody started out like as a total drunk, you know, homeless when they started drinking. No, they started just having a little bit, so no problem. So we're trying to help people. So we do promote this. And if one is chanting Hare Krishna, which is, then it's very easy. The pleasure from Hare Krishna is so great that these other things don't seem very interesting anymore. So number 9, someone mentioned. Verse number 15 is, others who engage in sacrifice by the cultivation of knowledge worship the Supreme Lord as one without a second, diverse in many and in the universal form. Here Krishna is describing how different people worship. The first one is, before that, is always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down to me. These great souls perpetually worship me. Others worship, but they don't know who the personality of God is. It's a summary of the previous verses. Those who appear know only nothing but Krishna, Mahatmas. Others are lower. The distressed, poor, inquisitive, they'll come to Krishna once. One who worships himself is one of the Supreme. One who concocts some form of the Supreme Lord and worships that, that's idol worship. Concocted form of the Lord. Deity worship is not concocted, it's authorized and it's come down from ancient times, how to worship the form of the Lord. And he who accepts the universal form of the Lord, the Virata Rupa, and worships that. The lowest are those who think that they're the Lord, thinking that they're non-different, they're dominant. They think they're the Supreme Lord, and they worship themselves. There's Mayavadis who actually say that, I'm God. Sometimes they become very popular. You're also God. You just don't know, but if you worship me, I'll teach you how to, I know that you're really God also. My cousin, I had one stupid cousin, and he told me, I remember when I was high school, he was older, he said, I don't believe in God. And at that time, I wasn't very religious, but I knew that was wrong. But I didn't know what to say to him. And later, after when I was a devotee, he had one book called Three Magic Words. And he would say, this is really, you know, this is it. So he gave me that book, and I looked at it, and I have a habit of looking at the back of books first, just to kind of see. And it said, it said in there, don't look in the back, you have to read the whole book. But I looked at the back, and that was the last thing. The three magic words are, you are God. So he said, that's the difference between your religion and me. I think I'm God. I said, well, you just got through telling me how miserable you are and how much you're suffering and how unhappy you are. So what kind of God is that? And, you know, why would I want to be that? He said, oh, I'm just accepting this suffering just to see what it's like. This is like their Leela. They have a stupid answer for everything. I'm actually God, but I'm miserable and suffering because I just wanted to see what it's like. Now, Lord Chaitanya came to see what it was like, that how could Radharani love Krishna so much? That's different. He didn't come in this world to suffer like we do. But that's how the Mayavadis think. I met one Mayavadi once. He was a grand-nephew of Rabindranath Tagore. Heard of him? Famous Bengali poet from not too long ago, 100 years or something. So this man was very proud. He was a professor. He was in Japan. And he asked me if I wanted to go eat at a restaurant. And I said, well, no, our spiritual master told us we should only eat at the temple. Ho, 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 ho. He said, that's because he's from Calcutta. And in Calcutta, the restaurants are very dirty and unclean. So. And this is Japan. Everything is fine. Then he said, and my uncle taught me that my temple is on both sides of the road. Every place is a temple, because wherever I go, it's a temple, because I'm God. And whatever I eat is prasadam, because it's offered to me, I'm God. No problem. Right? Yet you haven't met people like that? Prabhupada, at the beginning, when he first came to America, many of the intoxicated LSD people, they would go, I am God, you know, and Prabhupada always had a way to deal with them. Because he was from India, where these guys that say they're God have all kinds of scripture and Sanskrit quotes and everything to back it up. But they're confused. This type of God worship, for they can understand that they are not the material body, but are actually spiritual. At least it is. Generally, the impersonalists worship the Supreme Lord in this way. The second class includes the worshippers of demigods who consider any form to be a form of the Lord. And the third includes those who cannot conceive of anything beyond the manifestation of the material universe. So that's verse 15. The Bhagavad Gita is an amazing book. I hope all of you are reading it regularly. How many people have a Bhagavad Gita of their own? Everybody. So even if we just read one verse a day, in 2 years you read the whole Bhagavad Gita. Reading one verse doesn't take more than a few minutes. If you're really a slow reader, it might take 5 or 10 minutes to read the purport also. If you just read the verses, you can read the whole book in a few hours. But you can read the same verse every day, even, and you'll find, if you just make an experiment, read the same verse and purport every day for a week, and you'll be amazed at how every day it seems like, oh, I never read this before. Mm-hmm. And the more days you read it, the more it'll seem like that. Because there's one material explanation for that, is that memories aren't very good, and we forget. But the other is because Krishna will reveal himself more and more and more, the real reason. And you'll find more and more and more realizations how Krishna is just explaining everything in every verse practically. So, any question? We have a few minutes. I remember when I first went to the Sunday feast, the temple president was able to talk and talk and talk. And he was a good talker. But, and he would so many times say so, like a conclusion. Then he would talk another 10, 15 minutes. And I was like, when are they going to eat? I know all this already. I know it. I know. I heard this before. When are they going to serve that food? You know, I felt like saying, you know, when are you going to stop? I don't know if he ever even took questions. He just kept saying so in conclusion and then again. And, but any questions? Sodom is ready, so yes, obviously you're going to get it. Any questions? Yeah.
Just a quick one. You mentioned that impersonalists want to merge into Nirvana because they suffer so much that they want to become
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say that with Vedic knowledge, we should actually say that the idea of nothingness is absurd? No,
yeah, well, it's the Buddhists want nothing. The Mayavadis who read the Vedas, they get this idea of oneness, but they can't describe what that is. And who can describe nothing? Someone told me once that physicists made a 25-page explanation of zero. You know, and then if you say, well, this doesn't make any sense, I say, well, yes, good. You have to have a postgraduate degree in quantum physics, then you'll understand. And one boy was, actually he was quite a nice boy, you know, he'd come around a lot, he was at a university, but he also read a lot of Buddhist books. And he said, the Buddhists write extensively about nothing. I said, well, how can you write extensively about nothing? He said, I don't know, but they do it. They write book after book, you know, to describe nothing. I saw a cartoon of the Dalai Lama's birthday. So he was opening a big box, and all the monks were watching, and it was empty. And he said, oh, nothing, just what I've always wanted. So I told that boy, if you sit down for lunch, and I just give you an empty plate, I say, well, that's what you're after, right? The ultimate thing, nothing. You know, but that's different. Then they'll say, no, that's the material world, but in the spiritual, but they're suffering. They see that everyone is suffering and that activities result in suffering, entanglement. So they're thinking nothing would be better. Just hear nothing, see nothing, think nothing. In other words, become a stone. Yeah.
What was the purpose of the Buddha coming here?
Well, he's Krishna and came for a special purpose. And came to confuse the atheists. Was it early in Kali Yuga and people were misrepresenting the Vedas in so many ways, especially in animal slaughter. Because there are Vedas that talk about animal slaughter with specific sacrifices. So they were like making a business of it, telling people the Vedas say you have to do this. So he came to pull people away from that. And he lived a proper life, nonviolent and good and compassionate and kind and everything. And the teachings we get now from Buddhists are probably quite removed from Buddha.
So they're no Buddhists then?
Huh?
They're no Buddhists?
Well, there might be some. You know, there's people that try to be. And there's still Buddhists that are vegetarians, and you know.
That was the purpose of it.
That was the main thing.
Ahimsa.
To stop the animal slaughter in the name of the Vedas. And so they had twisted the Vedas and misused. It's like now the people that misrepresent the Bible, you can't straighten them out. You know.
Of course.
The people have heard so much wrong.
Oh, yeah.
So he said, forget the Vedas, just follow me.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, it's considered atheism. But
so then
he set it up then for Shankaracharya, who came and established Mayavadi, but with the Vedas. And then Lord Chaitanya came and gave us the real thing.
And people have misconstrued the fact that it was a mushroom and then it was a piece of animal meat when Buddha died, so therefore it's given life to many Buddhists to take some meat instead of the child.
Yeah.
And the other thing is the emptiness thing is actually for meditation, it's to see emptiness, not nothingness. And if you go deep into meditation don't have disturbed the mind of anything else. Emptiness through the breath is the best way of doing that. So it's not that they, I mean, as far as renunciation is concerned, you're getting nothingness connection,
Yeah, it's been twisted and changed.
It does get twisted, yeah, all the time.
It's a long time after, 3,000 years, you know.
The Prabhu that was here speaking the other day refused to accept the fact that Buddha was the incarnation of Krishna, and there was almost a big war going on in the temple because of it.
Where?
That was misinformation. That was the last time I was at the temple. Everyone knows Buddha is the incarnation of Krishna.
Yeah.
There's some more misinformation.
But, like in Thailand, the Hindus wanted to have some big international convention there, and the Buddhists stopped it because the Hindus say Buddha is an incarnation of Krishna, and they don't want that. But they don't think Buddha is God, because they have no idea of God. But it's quite, and I don't know where they got that story that he ate meat. And if he died from eating the meat, then it would have been a message, don't eat it, I would think.
There was a mushroom called a boar trotter or a pig trotter, so it got down the years, it got people think that it needed a pig trotter to die, and
looked like
from that, his last meal, somebody gave him that, but it's actually a mushroom called a pig trotter.
Oh really, well who knows what it was.
That's officially from Siddhartha, which is really written
according. Yeah, anybody can make up, but we know, there is some place in the Buddha writing where he said, beware, because in the future they'll say, I ate meat. In the back.
Is it right to criticize the Mayavadi? Because in the next one, the version, it says that an ultimate goal of any Christian goal of peace is to merge with God.
I never read that. The Mayavadis are, they're trying to get out, but there's different kinds of Mayavadis, so they're different kinds of impersonalists. So the Mayavadis are the ones that are absorbed in Maya, and they're against God. They say there's no God. God, or if he is God, he can't think, he can't see, he can't hear, he can't walk. They're insulting God. Then there's called Brahmavadis, who are not sure, but they're not against God, but they're not sure exactly what is God or something. Those people, if they hear, they'll become, devotees of God. But the Mayavadis will just argue. And then there's the Buddhists, they're called the Shunyavadis. They think everything is zero. Everything is nothing. So we don't want to criticize exactly, but their philosophy is wrong. It's not according to the Vedic, not according to Bhagavad Gita. That you can become God, or you are God, everyone is God, or there's no God, everything is all one, the variety is only in the material world. If this material world, which is a perverted reflection, has so much variety, then how much variety must the spiritual world have? Right? Like, we're all individuals, right? Like, I phone up people that I haven't talked to on the phone sometimes for 10 years, and they say, oh, Maharaj, hello. Right? And if they see you, they might say, well, you lost weight or you're looking tired, but they know who you are. Right? Even after many years. And the police can identify you by so many different ways, by your fingerprint, by your hair print, by your ear print, by your eye, that's a better way than the fingerprint now, by your teeth, when they find a skeleton or something, they go over the dental work and they figure out who it was. Everyone is different. So if the material world has so much variety, then how can it be that the source of the material world doesn't have any variety? Has much more variety. Much more colors. If you studied a little bit physics, we can see a very limited range of the colors, right? We can't see ultraviolet, can't see infrared, can see just a few in between. The computer says it has 64 million, right? But who can take that out, you know. But the spiritual has much more. Same thing, sound. Even a dog can hear so many things you can't hear. Or you can smell so many things, thousands of times more than you can. But the spiritual world has all those things much, much more, and they're all pleasant. They're all nice. But here there's so many bad smells and so many ugly things and so many distressing sounds and so many troublesome people that by their own analysis they think better there's nothing. Right? But try it. They have those tanks, sense deprivation, right? And they experiment. People can't tolerate that for very long. They go crazy and they can't feel anything, they can't hear anything, can't see anything. Not natural. But that's what my body is saying, that's what you want. You know, finish up everything. So we don't want people to think that that's all right. To merge, we don't want to merge with Krishna literally and not exist anymore. We want to, I never read that in extra devotion, but the goal is to have a similar desire, you know, mentality of Krishna and have the same mission as Krishna, the same, you know, be part of Krishna's world. And then your individuality is actually more manifested. Psychiatrists have actually tested devotees and they found that they have much more individuality and individual type thinking than other people. Even though everybody had shaved head and everybody dresses more or less the same, their thinking is much more individual and independent. But the people that put, you know, earrings in their eyelids and bolts to their tongue and everything are thinking that they're much different. But they're the same thing. They're just trying to enjoy the world or make a hit by decorating their body. And there's many different ways that people decorate their body, but they're all decorating their body. They're all having sex. They're all getting intoxication. I know when we smoked marijuana, we thought we were very superior to the people who drink beer. Right? We are much superior to them. But what's the difference? You're just getting intoxicated. Whether you decorate your body with, you know, a magic marker and blood, you know. In Japan, these kids on Sunday, they dress up in really weird ways and go hang around the park. And some of them dress up like nurses and then they put blood on their face and walk around with a big hypodermic or something. You know, they're trying to shock people. But they're decorating their body. They're no different than the person who went to the, you know, what is it? What's your big department store here?
Selfridge.
What's the really expensive one?
Harrods.
Yeah, they went to Harrods and they bought $10 million worth of cosmetics and had someone put it on for them. It's the same thing. If someone just takes and cuts their hair, chops it up with a scissor and dyes it green, or they go to the most expensive hairdresser for thousands of dollars, they're doing the same thing. They're just decorating their body, thinking that this will attract somebody to me, and I'll be able to enjoy it. Or it will shock somebody they won't like it. Right? Like, when we're really frustrated, we can't become attractive to anybody, then we try to become especially unattractive. And then we think, these people, look at them freaking out looking at me. But now, nobody notices the guy with the green hair sticking out and the nails through his nose and stuff. Because there's so many of them. Nobody notices anything. They don't even notice us anymore. So in the 70s, you know, when we first started, like, people were shocked. How do you shave your head? How can you do that? You know, they couldn't believe it. And how can you put this mark on your face and wear a dress? Now nobody notices. I go all over the world and very rare that anyone asks me, like, what is that? Once in a while, they don't even know it's a religion. There's so many freaky people. Nobody knows anything. But Krishna knows. And even if they don't know and they see the devotee tilak and stuff, they get purified. So, time for prasad. Yeah. Anybody ready? Anybody want to take? Raise your hand.
Me.
You need servers?
Yeah.
Any volunteers for serving? You get more benefit by serving, and there'll always be some left over for you.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And cleanness as well.
Who is the organizer? Radha Vandana Ishwara.
You have some cleanness?
Bhagavad Gita, Gita.
Yeah.
Someone to clean up afterward? Even more special mercy? Julie, all right.
Correct.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Someone is Chavikandra Maharaj Ki Jai.
Yay!
Maharaj, would you like to say the sadhana
prayer? Oh, the prayer? It will say it in English. This material body,
this material body
is a lump of ignorance.
Is a lump of ignorance.
The senses
are
networks
of
paths leading to death.
Of
all the senses,
the
tongue is the most voracious and the most difficult to control. Very difficult to conquer the tongue. So let us take this prasadam
to
our full satisfaction.
And
so doing, glorify their Lordship. Shishi Radha and Krishna,
Shishi
Gornitai, Jagannath Subhadra Balaram,
Mahaprasadam
Ki Jai.
Well, one can say, Ramsan, it'll make it easy to
get. People know that. Like, I saw this signboard in Nigeria. It said, taste is everything.
Whatever that means.
Taste is everything. That make it was an advertisement for those things that Maggie, they call it, tell us the
Ajina Mosa. Means in a good taste or bad taste or something.
No, I mean, this was particular. The taste is everything. Your tongue is everything. If your tongue is happy, nothing else to worry about. And that's that Ajina Mosa, you know. You know, monosodium glutamate.
Sorry?
Monosodium glutamate. Mm. It's a chemical, and they put in the food, and then it tastes good, but it actually tricks your brain, so you think it tastes good. But
it just triggers those.
You think it tastes good, but it really doesn't. Not like you put spice; it makes real taste.
That
monosodium glutamate.
Rubbish, but if you put that chemical.
Monosodium glutamate has no taste, but it makes you think it tastes.
Yeah.
So therefore, you can have the junkiest food, all this fast food.
That's why people get the big tissue, all that rubbish.
They think it's good, so they just eat and eat, but it actually has no taste. So how are you, Miss Julie?
Yeah, I'm all right.
I lost your phone number then.
Uh-huh. Well,
I don't know what happened. They just keep. It was in my phone last. No, I think what happened. I was using. Now I remember. I was using another phone.
Yeah.
And when I left,